So the talk here is college considerations for Christians. Just let you know, see if you're in the right room. Yeah, they have a lot of really good speakers at this conference, and then they have me. So I might ramble a little bit and forget what I'm talking about. I'll try not to, but just bear with me. My name's Dave Klein. My wife and I have been homeschooling for about 16 years. We started when our first was 4 years old, and he's 20 now. We have 13 kids now, and so we're less than halfway done. We have two kids that would be college age if they're going that direction, and one more that would be graduating next year if we did graduation. But through homeschooling, along the way, God has taught us a lot of things about a lot of the areas of life, but specifically as far as training our children, we started just questioning a lot of what we did in the normal routine and started seeing that a lot of what we did wasn't really in the Bible. We couldn't find it anywhere. Like, for example, grades. So pretty early on, we just ditched the whole idea of grades and said, well, let's see if we can get by without it. And it's been working fine so far. We just focus on teaching our children what they need to know as they grow up, giving them what they can handle, trying to keep them challenged, and don't worry about what grade level they're at or where the world says they should be at. And the other thing was graduation. We just couldn't really find that concept anywhere. I know it's what everybody does. It's the norm. But for us, we just couldn't find any scriptural reason to justify doing it. So we did find one thing that was kind of close to that concept in Matthew 19:5. And this is actually coming from Genesis, but Jesus is quoting it. Jesus says that, "For this cause shall a man leave father and mother and shall cleave to his wife." So for our family, graduation, we decided instead our graduation will be when our kids get married. So then we only have to do one reception and one set of gifts, so some conveniences there too. But we just have been convicted that it's not, that we don't have to do everything the way everyone has always done it or the way we did when we grew up or the way the world expects us to. So we're just, the whole purpose of this talk, this talk is a little bit different than, there's other talks here about college, and there's several college vendors here in the vendor hall. So you can get a lot of information about if you are planning to go to college. This talk is kind of a little bit different slant. I'm just bringing up some issues, some things for you to consider as to whether or not college is the right decision. I'm not going to say completely that it's not, but I will be bringing up some alternative ideas and things, just to let you know. The reason I put this talk together was when I was going through high school, and even since then, I've just seen that college has become such an accepted norm of what you do once you're done with high school. That's just the next step. Nobody questions it. Whether you have a reason for it, whether you have a goal in mind, whether you've figured out that college is going to help you meet those goals, that's what you do. You go to college when you're done. Or if you want to be successful, you go to college. And we'll talk more about what success means in a little while. And so I just kind of wanted to bring up some just to raise some issues so you guys can think about it more. I'm hoping to encourage people to just pray about college before just taking it as an automatic step. One of the consequences of this idea of college just becoming the normal thing to do is that kids do end up going off to college without any goal in mind. I know that was a common thing when I was growing up, is that you spend the first 2 years of college trying to figure out what it was you were there for, and then the next 2 years you might actually try to do something with it. And I've heard some people recently advocating, even if you are planning to go to college, this person was advocating going to college, but he recommended taking a few years off first. Work, go to the mission field short term for a while, do something like that, just serve around the home, just do something, take some time to be able to establish what your goals are before you do make that decision. Because college is not an end. It's not the goal. I mean, when you're going through the primary education process, even in homeschooling, that's often brought out there as the goal. The courses you take, the things you study, essays you might write, activities you get involved in, chess club debate, these different kinds of things. A lot of these are looked at as things to help you get into college, help you get into a good college. And so with that, running through your minds all through your schooling years, it's easy to start thinking, oh yeah, that's what I'm here for. My goal is to go to college. But college is not a goal in itself. It has to be, if you're going to do it, it's got to be a means to an end. It's got to be something to help you reach what your real goal is. So I think the first step, I think the first thing I would encourage you all to try to do is to have a clear goal. And preferably what we need to try to have as Christians is God's goal. We need to know what is God's will for our lives. What does he want us to do? How does he want us to serve him? So that's, you know, in our culture, that's not the norm again. The norm is to figure out, what do you want to do? You know, you've probably all been asked that lots of times. What do you want to do? What do you want to do when you grow up? Or what do you want to do when you get out of high school? What do you want to do when you're done with school? And very, very seldom do you hear someone asking you, what does God want you to do? What do you think the Lord's leading you to do? But we need to think that way. We need to be turning to Him for direction. We can really make a mess of our lives if we take it on our own. But if we follow His leading, I we're going to be a lot better off. So I would encourage you, young people, to pray about what God wants you to do. Talk with your parents about it, and just really seek wisdom from the Lord. And He will give it. If anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask, and God gives liberally. So turn to Him for that wisdom, and He'll show you what He wants you to do. And it may be that what He wants you to do will require college. We have a friend, a young man who just recently finished his medical internship, and now he's looking at using his medical skills out in the mission field. Well, he could never become a doctor without going to college. Just, I don't think there's any home medical schools yet. So that was something that, you know, that God is using, and God showed him that He wanted him to do, so that's the route he took. And so if that's the case, then that's what you should do. I think, I'm going to bring this up later, but I'll just mention it quickly here, that if we're doing what God wants us to do, that's the best spot to be in, wherever that is. So, now once you have a goal in mind of what you want to do, or what God wants you to do, see, I'm saying it too, once you have a clear idea of where God's leading you, then the next step is to evaluate, is college the best way to reach that goal? Is that really the best way to prepare for that? And here's why I wanted to just bring up some issues with that, some concerns about it, because there are risks associated with it. Now, it may be the right choice, it may be what you need, but even if it is, you need to be aware of the risks and the dangers and the cost associated with going to college. I mean, we could talk real briefly first about the cost. I mean, there's obviously monetary cost. A lot of people end up going into a lot of debt to go to college, or working all through their younger years and hoarding up and saving up to pay for an expensive education, where those resources could maybe be used for something more important earlier on, because it is expensive, or can be expensive. But probably the bigger cost is the time. When you think of it, at least 4 years for most people to get through college education, to get a college degree. And most times you can learn what you need in that, a lot less time than that. But you won't get the degree. And so that's the question. Is that degree really that necessary, or really, worth that, the cost and the risks? And so some of the risks we'll talk about. The first one I'll bring up here is that there's a lot of unbiblical and anti-biblical influences that you're going to find in colleges. Obviously, in secular colleges, there's going to be quite a bit of that. But even in Christian colleges, there's going to be some. There's... I'd like to quote from an article by an author, Randy Alcorn. He's written some pretty neat books. But this was from an article titled, "What Are Some Criteria to Use for Choosing a Christian College or Secular University?" And this is the quote from Randy. "I have spoken at a fair number of Christian liberal arts colleges and have been concerned with the drift away from belief in God's Word, particularly in the biology, psychology, and sociology departments, but often even in the Bible departments. Unbelief spreads and expands like yeast. What really strikes me is the false advertising. The doctrinal statements are still very good, but they don't reflect the actual beliefs and teachings of many of the professors. As one academic vice president of a Christian liberal arts college told me when I was speaking there for a week, if Christian parents really knew what their kids are being taught here, they'd pull them out of school tomorrow. Now, you'll never see that quote in a brochure." And that was a quote from Andy Alcorn, his experience in speaking at a lot of Christian colleges, Bible schools, and yet they're still straying from a belief and taking a stand on the Bible. A year or two ago, I heard about a pretty prominent Christian college or university that, in order to gain accreditation from one of the big accreditation groups, they had to teach evolution in their science department. And they withstood that for quite a while, but eventually they broke down and said, okay, we'll teach evolution in our science department so we can get that accreditation, because we can teach creation in our theology departments, thinking they could balance it out that way. But that's still a compromise, and compromise is not what God calls us to. Then they got their accreditation. And you have to stop and think, what was the reason for that accreditation? What did that gain? Is an accreditation cause someone to learn more? I mean, this basically is just something saying that somebody else says that this is a good school and that a degree from a school has some value. So really, it's just the praise of men. Like, it didn't look up the verse reference, but there's that verse that talks about, you know, woe to you who seek praise from men and reject the praise that comes from God, or something to that effect. Sorry, I didn't look that up. I should have. But a lot of what we end up going after in colleges is that praise of men, the recognition of the world, even just the whole degree itself. Are you guys here very familiar with Jim Elliot? Anybody here? Can you raise your hand? You ever heard Jim Elliot? Okay. Jim Elliot was a missionary to Ecuador, who was martyred in Ecuador. He was killed by the what was known then as the Auca Indians. There's been a modern movie made about the event, a couple of them actually. But he once said, I'm going to have a quote from him later on, it's pretty neat. But one thing he said in a letter, or maybe it was in his journal, he wrote that he seeks the degree AUG, approved unto God, which really is what we should be looking for. You know, we need to be thinking God's approval. You know, ultimately, when we stand before Him someday, what degrees we had aren't going to matter. You know, what recognition we got from the world is not going to matter, except that it might matter in a negative way if it's pulling us away from Him. Okay, here's I forgot to bring this. At our table, which is out by in the main entry of the vendor hall, in the corner out there, we have a little yellow booklet you can get a copy for free. It's called Ministerial Education. It was written by a pastor in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. And it's a really neat little book. It's kind of like a collection of mini biographies of some people that God has used in the past in some really great ways. Some that are pretty well known, others that aren't. But it's got some really interesting information, because the focus of the book was that many of the people that God used in some really great ways for, you know, huge revivals and to really lead a lot of people to Him didn't have education, didn't have the normal training that you would think that a preacher should have or would have. But in that book, he has a quote here that I'll read for you. It says, and this is by Glenn Konjersky, "The real Christianity calls us outside the camp to bear the reproach of Christ and His cross. What college on earth aims at such an end? Their real aim is all the other way. It is to lift us above the reproach of Christ, to remove the offense of the cross, to win the respect and esteem of the world. To this end, they pursue academic excellence and accreditation, for it is not the standards of God's word that concern them, but the standards of the world." And someplace else in that book, I think he mentions the verse where God chooses the maimed and the weak and the cast off, and chooses that those that are not to confound those that are, that no flesh or glory in His sight. I should look at that reference too. I'm sorry, but God's way of viewing things is so different than the world's, and we live in the world. We live in and our culture affects us in a lot of subtle ways. It's not something intentionally that we're doing, but it just affects us, and we start looking at things the way the world does. And I think we need to turn back to God's word to see what the real standards are, what the real standards of excellence are, what the real goals are. So that was one of the risks, was the unbiblical influence that we'd find in colleges. And like I said, it's obviously going to be a lot worse in secular colleges. And I know some Christian families do choose to use secular colleges because that seems to be the best place to get a certain type of education. Maybe that's the best place with a program for what you're trying to do. We had some friends that were studying a certain type of music, and there was a secular university was the one that had the best program for that type of thing. So that's where they went. And that family did run into some struggles. That young person did have some real challenges to his faith. Another risk of going to college is the pressure to conform. That's going to be there. The professors, from both professors and fellow students. Professors, if you think about it, their job is to influence young people. Right? That's what they're trained to do. That's what they're there to do. And it's difficult for them to draw that line at just the subject matter that they're supposed to be teaching. So they go on from there and start influencing other ways. They start passing on other values of theirs to the students, or at least trying to. Some don't do it really blatantly or intentionally, but some do. I did go to college for a little while. Right off the bat, I don't have a college degree, but I did go for a while, and I was hoping to major in business, but I had to go through all the normal 2 years of general education. And so one of the classes I had was early American history. So it was supposed to be from the discovery by Columbus through the Civil War. And yet the two historical figures that the professor talked most about were Ronald Reagan and George Bush, the first one. You know, not very glowing terms. And they had nothing to do with what the subject matter was. But those were things that were important to him. You know, he was really against those guys, and he wanted to make sure he got as many digs in as he could in his classroom. And I think it's just a really common thing. Now, he was really blatant about it. Others aren't so blatant, but it's still going to be there. So you're going to have pressures from that angle. And it's difficult to defend against those pressures. As a young person, you're going there. You're going to this person to learn. You know, now, we're in the world. So I'm not advocating, you know, stay away from anybody who's not a Christian. We need to be in the world, but we need to be in the world to reach the world, not to be reached by it. And when you go to college, you're putting yourself in a position to learn from someone else, not to bring a message to them. Now, you know, if you feel called to preach at a college, then that would be a great thing. In fact, I don't know if this fits in my plan or my outline here, but I'll tell you a little story about a man we met in Mexico. He got saved in high school, and it was just so, he had so much zeal for the Lord. He was starting with Bible studies on his campus and his neighborhood. So he had two different Bible studies going while he was going through high school. And when he got out, he just wanted to preach. That's all he wanted to do. But his parents wanted him to go to college. They really wanted him to get a good education so he could get a good job and make a good living. And so he, in the end, decided he should do that to honor his parents. He'd do what they wanted him to do. And so he said, well, if I have to go to college, when he looked around which college to go to, he found, well, which one around here has the most people so I can preach a lot? And so he chose a really big college in Monterrey, Mexico. And he preached. And he went through the whole course and he got his degree, but for 4 years he preached. He preached in the campus, you know, in the common areas and in the cafeteria, anywhere he could. And 4 years later, when he graduated, he had a church, you know, just made up of people who were saved through his preaching. And this, you know, just a young man. And I met him he's older now, and when I met him, his kids were, you know, high school age already. But it was just neat to hear his testimony and to see that, you know, God obviously protected him through college. So he avoided those dangers because he was there with the mission. He was there to serve the Lord. He was there, first of all, honoring his parents. And so if you young people, if your parents want you to go to college, then don't take anything I'm saying to use an excuse to go against what they're telling you. But be aware of these issues. That's the main thing I want to do, is just bring up these issues so you can be aware of them and think about them and consider them. That's what this is, college considerations. So there's the pressure from professors. There's also the pressure from students. You know, peer pressure, the same kind of peer pressure that many of us have avoided through homeschooling. In fact, for our family, that's probably the main reason that we homeschool, was to avoid peer pressure. Because I knew growing up through public schools that I was taught so much more by my peers than I was by my teachers. You know, my teachers were these people I kind of had to put up with just to get through the day, and my peers were who I was really there for. You know, they were the ones I had to please. They were the ones that whose approval I was looking for. And so they had my peers had a much bigger influence on me as I was going through school than my teachers did. And the same thing will happen in a college setting. So some of you, if you've been homeschooled through all your childhood, you know, you may not be ready for that or used to, or, you know, expecting that, but it will come. And it's very subtle. It's not something that's real obvious and easy to see. Yeah, I got a note here about even good kids when put together. So even in a Christian college where most of the kids are coming from Christian homes, there's just kind of a reverse synergy that happens when you bring a bunch of young people together unsupervised. Not to put you guys down, but it just happens. We tend to bring out the worst in ourselves if we don't have some external check to keep that from happening. And that would happen, like I said, in a college setting as well, especially if you're going to leave home to go to college, and then you have that even more. That brings up another one of the risks I see, and that's the development of habits and appetites that go against our long-term goals. And again, this is probably even more if you're leaving home to go to college. But even not, even just going out there, this may be the first time when you're away from home for a significant amount of time, you know, out from your parents' authority. And that newfound independence can be kind of addicting. And it can be hard to give that up later on. Sometimes you hear the expression, by someone will say, I'm not quite ready to settle down yet. You know, which basically means I'm not ready to be part of a family yet, right? People will say that they're saying maybe they're not ready to get married, they're not ready to have a family. But why would that be? You know, we start out settled down, right? We all start in families. And so what is it that's caused a young person at some point in their life to not be ready for what was really the norm all their life? And I was wondering, could it be this gap that we put in there, this gap of 4 years where we take kids out of their homes, out of a family setting, and give them this taste of independence, this taste of, quote, freedom. And then they don't want to give that up. And you do give it up when you start a family. My wife and I were, through God's grace, protected from that because we, you know, without our, not intentionally, we just married young. So we pretty much got married. My wife was just out of high school, and I was out for a year. But we were both still living with our parents when we got married. So we never had that independent life on our own. But we had friends that did. And we heard of their struggles adjusting to married life, or just adjusted to not being, you know, having that independence. So we saw it in our own lives when we had children. After we got married, we didn't have any children for a few years, you know, following people's advice. And my wife and I developed a lot of selfish habits, a lot of, you know, time-wasting habits, things that we did that we couldn't do later when we had children. And we realized later that if we would have had children sooner, then God would have used those children to help us to avoid a lot of those time-wasting decisions that we made. Overall, I think that it's just not God's, independence is not God's goal for us. God's goal for us is interdependence, to be dependent on each other and to be dependent on Him. And having freedom and independence when we're young is a way to start to make it builds a tension when we want to settle, when we try to adjust to the interdependence that God wants for us. I think, again, that's the reason why He says that for this reason will a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. I think that's God's plan, is that you go from the family you're born in to the family that you're going to start. There's no real reason. Now, there are examples of some people not going that route in the Bible. Timothy, for example, left his family when he was young and he wasn't married. But he left on a mission. He left to preach. He left to serve. And if that's what you're doing, then I think God's going to protect you through that. But if that's not it, if we're chasing the world's goals, if we're doing things, or if we're just doing it because that's what everybody else does, then I think we don't have that protection. I think we risk causing a lot of trouble for ourselves by putting ourselves at odds with God's best for us. Another thing that an appetite that can be developed in a college setting is just the enjoyment. You develop an enjoyment for the intellectual and physical challenges that come. Colleges are challenging things. You know, have a lot of time studying. You may have sports activities that you get into. And those things aren't really part of real life. When you're beyond that point, you don't have that same type of intellectual adrenaline rush that you might get in a college setting as you're cramming for exams and that type of thing. And it can be an adjustment. It can be a difficult adjustment for people. And for some people, they don't ever get over that. And that's why I think you see a lot of workaholics today, because they never got over that need for that adrenaline of having a deadline to meet, or having, you know, something more to get done. And I think it's not something that's really healthy for us long term, but it's something that we can develop an appetite for and a desire for by going through college. There's also the level of social interaction that comes with college. That can be hard to give up too, and that can be, you know, again, something that can make it more difficult to become part of a family again and not always have time with your friends like you would have a lot more of in a college setting. I want to read a quote from Jim Elliot. If you aren't familiar with him, I really would recommend that you get a book called The Shadow of the Almighty. It's by Elizabeth Elliot. It's a biography of Jim Elliot, mostly comprised of excerpts from his letters and his journal. There's also, you can get the journals of Jim Elliot, which is actually just the raw journals that he wrote through the years, which is another excellent book. But I think The Shadow of the Almighty is probably the best overall biography, especially because it emphasizes, I think, how God worked through Jim Elliot and how God led him as a young man all the way up until his death. He died pretty young, actually, too, in his late 20s in Ecuador. But it's really encouraging. It's just a great book for young people and for anybody. I first read it when I was older. It's also available as an audio book by Blackstone Audio. If you want to look at blackstoneaudio.com, they have an audio version of that book, actually read by the author, Elizabeth Elliot. But here's a quote from him. This is a letter that he wrote to his dad in response to a letter his dad had written, extolling the virtues of education. And so Jim Elliot's reply was, "You speak of it as rounding out one's manhood. It rounds out all right, but I'm afraid sometimes it's more in the style of 1 Corinthians 8:1. Knowledge puffs up. Culture, philosophy, disputes, drama, concerts and opera, politics, anything that can occupy the intellect seems to turn aside the hearts of many here on campus from a humble life in the steps of the Master. No, education is dangerous, and personally I am beginning to question its value in a Christian's life. I do not disparage wisdom. That comes from God, not PhDs." That's just a sample of some of the things that he wrote. He's the one who wrote a quote you might have heard, even if you haven't heard of him. He had a quote that said, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." And that quote kind of sums up his life, and that's what he did. I mean, he gave up the life that he couldn't keep anyways. We're all going to die at some point. He gave that up to pursue, you know, heavenly goals that you can never lose. And so he's really an encouraging guy. I'd encourage you to read more about him. Okay, that's off topic. But anyways, now a lot of the risks that we talked about can be found in other places, not just in college. It's just getting out, when you know, out in the world, you're going to have those. Even on the mission field. I mean, we know people who've gone to the mission field and been, you know, introduced to temptations that led them astray. We know people that were on the mission field for a while and had to come back off of it because of falling away in different ways. So those risks are there all the time. Because that's why I mentioned earlier, and I'll mention again, that the main thing is for us to know that we're in God's will, to do what he calls us to do. Because if we're in his will, then he'll protect us through those different temptations and trials that'll come. Okay, now, beyond the risks, another consideration about college is whether or not it's really effective. Is it really the best way? You know, if you've got a goal, you've got a career field in mind you think God wants you to pursue, for what, you know, whatever the reasons, is it really the best way to get the training and to be equipped for that goal? Like we mentioned, there's some things where there's no other choice. If God's calling you to be a brain surgeon, you're going to have to go to college. It's just, I don't think there's any way around that. I don't think there's any correspondence brain surgery courses. So there may be times when that's the case, but for a lot of things, it's really just not. There's a lot of things where, you know, we've kind of adopted this idea that college is the repository of all knowledge and training, and that's the only place you can get it. But there's so much that you can learn in so many other ways. Well, think about just homeschooling in general. You know, we're all homeschoolers here. It's a homeschool conference, right? And you probably have heard at different times the quotes about the statistics about how well homeschoolers are doing in standardized tests and things like that compared to both public school and private school students. Homeschoolers tend to come out ahead on all these types of things. And if you stop and think about why that is, I mean, you think it's because us amateurs are just doing a better job at teaching than the professionals? It's probably not. But I think it really could be the fact that we have that one-on-one or small group type of environment. We're able to work with our children directly. We're able to see where they're struggling. You know, we're able to spend the time it takes to really teach somebody. And you can't do that in a classroom setting, which is what colleges are. Now, people talk about the class sizes in public schools, and they're trying to get them smaller and stuff like that. But in colleges, it's not the case. I mean, they're huge. You get 100, you know, student classes and even more in some places, where you got this one person lecturing to this giant hall of people. Now, the thing with college, or just classroom-type teaching, is that it's something that was designed for quantity, not quality. Right? The school setting was designed to teach as many people as possible in as little time as possible. It wasn't designed as the best way to teach. I mean, obviously, you can't individually mentor thousands of students, right? So this is an efficiency that was developed. And it is more efficient as far as getting them through the system, but the people aren't learning as much as the statistics show, and as real life just shows us too. Now, in the field that I work in, I do computer programming, and it's become accepted, even though people still think that's the thing you do if you want to be a computer programmer or work in computers in general, you need to go to college for that. And that's still widely accepted as the norm. But on the other end of it, when you're actually out there working and you're hiring people, I worked for a while as a project manager. I had to hire programmers. And in doing that, I would talk with people that were just coming out of college and realize that they knew so little that we needed them to know. So they're basically going to start from square one when they started work with us, you know, because what they had learned might be helpful in some ways as background, but they didn't learn what we needed them to know. And it's still the case today, you know, for a lot of reasons. Partly schools have trouble keeping up with technology and with changes and things, but also, like I mentioned, just the fact that it's geared towards quantity, not quality. They aren't really able to teach as well as you can learn by doing. You know, God led me into that field through kind of a weird route. I was out of work for a while and was looking for just about anything, and there was a company that wanted a programmer to do some stuff for them, but didn't want to pay what that would cost. So they were looking for somebody who didn't know how to program but wanted to learn on the job. And at that time, I said I would do anything, so I took that job and just learned, you know, through books and I think a video course that they got me. I never went to any schools at all for that. And I've been doing that for 16 years now, and the Lord's used that field to provide for our family of 15. And there was times when I had people working for me I was a manager with people working for me that had master's degrees. I didn't have college at all. not to be boastful about that. It was just God's mercy in our family, but to show that it just wasn't really. And so many people I've talked to in the field, in working, my coworkers and stuff, I'll talk to them, and they recognize that the college, the time they spent in college, was really largely wasted. They mostly, most of them enjoyed it, but they recognize that they could have learned a lot more just by doing the work. Here's a quote by an evangelist, Charles Finney. He's an old dead guy. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's a pretty neat guy. But here's a quote. This is actually from that book, Ministerial Education, which you can get a free copy of down at our table. It's the yellow book. It's the only book we have that's in color. The rest of it is all black and white. He says, while attending the high school, I meditated going to Yale College. Now, at this time, Yale College was still a Christian college. Most of the colleges in the U.S. were started as Christian colleges, most of the old ones. My preceptor was a graduate of Yale, but he advised me not to go. He said it would be a loss of time, as I could easily accomplish the curriculum of study pursued at the institution in 2 years, whereas it would cost me 4 years to graduate. You know, and that's just kind of a normal thing. Part of it is because of the whole idea of general education. Now, if God's leading you to a certain field and you need certain training for that, and you go to a college to pursue that training, you may get some of that, but you're also going to get at least a year and a half to 2 years of things that have nothing to do with the field that you're interested in, but are things that somebody else that you've never met has decided is important for you to know. You know, the idea of general education. You know, I'm sure they did it with good intentions, but these are not your family. These are not people that you know. And these are not probably people that know the Lord that are deciding these things are important for us to know. I mentioned before when I was trying to get that business degree for a while, I had to take classes like music appreciation. And, you know, music's fine, stuff like that, but it had nothing to do with what I was there to learn. But it was required, so you had to do that. So that's part of the reason why it takes, you know, 4 years to get what you can learn in 2 years. I think today you probably could learn most of what you'd get in 4 years in 1 year, because you also, if you learn in other ways, because of the efficiency, or the effectiveness, I should say, of learning through other means, which we'll talk about in a minute. Okay, the last of the concerns that I have about college is that method of training, the classroom style of training. It's just something that you don't find anywhere in the Bible. You don't find it used or recommended anywhere in the Bible. Now, some people say, well, you can't find cars in the Bible either. But there were schools at the time when Jesus picked his disciples and when Jesus trained his disciples. Schools were around at that time, but that wasn't the method that Jesus chose to use, or the method that he told his disciples to use as they made new disciples. The method that he used and told them to use and us to use today is discipleship. You know, in discipleship, you have a relationship. You have a student and a master, and or teacher, if you want. And they work together all the time. A disciple has one teacher or master, not several. You don't bounce around to a bunch of them. And I think it's just a much more effective way of learning. I get lost in my notes here, I'm sorry. Hold on a second. Oh yeah, here, speaking of Jesus choosing his disciples, there's a verse in Acts that I just love. Acts 4:13. This is when Peter and John were talking, and the Pharisees were getting mad at him and stuff. It says, when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men, they marveled. And this is the great part. And they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. You know, they knew these guys, where did these guys get this from? You know, they weren't trained. They didn't have all the education that we had. They didn't go to the rabbinical schools that we went to. Where did they get this from? And they took knowledge that they'd been with Jesus. They were Jesus' disciples. And not for that long. I mean, he wasn't training them for 4 years, and yet they learned quite a bit. And they learned by doing. Jesus wasn't just sitting there teaching all the time either. He was out ministering. All the time that Jesus was here on earth in his public ministry, he was out there working with the people, teaching the people. His disciples were along with him. They were serving with him. They were learning while doing. So discipleship is, you know, a small group of students in close relationship with their teacher. It's learning in real life. It's learning through real life. And another verse I didn't get, but you know, the Deuteronomy 6. You know, these things that I teach you today should hide them. Sorry, I'm gonna forget it now. But you know that verse: teach them as you walk along the way, as you get up, as you lie down. That's discipleship, if you think about it. It's teaching all through the day, as you walk along the way. So all through what you're doing. And that's one of the main, you know, it's such a popular homeschooling verse because that's what we're able to do by training our children at home. We're able to have them with us throughout the day, to teach them throughout the day as we walk along the way, as we get up, as we lie down. So I think that verse is a good picture of what discipleship is. And it's kind of sad and a bit ironic that one of the first areas that shifted away from the discipleship method of teaching, because that method of teaching was also used for most vocations, not just preaching. And it's called apprenticeship, but it's the same method. And it's kind of sad that the first area in the Western world where it shifted from that method was in preparing for the ministry. The very place where we see it modeled by Jesus, that was one of the first places where it shifted. We started building schools to prepare ministers. And that's what that book, I keep mentioning, Ministerial Education, talks a lot about that. But it's I don't understand why that happened. I mean, it's not everybody agreed with it as it went along. Some of the quotes from that book that you can see, and one of them I'll read to you right now. I have to make sure there's nothing else on this page I need to see. Yeah. Okay, there's a quote by Charles Spurgeon, another old dead guy, but another really neat guy. He was known as the Prince of Preachers. He preached, I think, something near 10 million people in his lifetime, and never had any sound systems, and he used to preach to thousands at one time, and they could all hear him. So, but this is something he wrote after he was asked to preach at this pretty big church in London. "The only thing which pleases me, as you will guess, is that I am right about college. I told the deacons that I was not a college man, and they said, 'That is to us a special recommendation, for you would not have much savor or unction if you came from college.'" And those are some old words they're using there, but basically the saying is you wouldn't have the message from the Lord and the power of His Spirit that you have if you'd been through college, because colleges are going to focus on training your mind. They're going to focus on passing on knowledge. What they don't really pass on is character. They don't pass on the spiritual qualities, really, and discipleship does. The discipleship approach does do that. Now, there are two key things that you find in discipleship that are missing in classroom training. The two of them are relationship and context. Okay, in a classroom setting, especially in a college setting, where you've got one professor and hundreds of students, and each student goes to a dozen different professors, there's no chance to build relationships there. Sometimes there are, sometimes there aren't good relationships, but you don't have the same type of thing that you would have when in a discipleship environment, where you're working closely with one person for whatever amount of time you're with them. The other is context. When you're trying to teach anything, and this applies to homeschooling as well, I think, or just to learning in general. When you try to pass on knowledge just by someone standing, like I'm doing now, someone just standing up and talking to you and telling you something, you might remember some of it. In a school setting, you may need to remember it long enough to pass the next test, right? And then you can pretty much toss it after that. And whether you want to or not, that's what happens. We just can't hold on to information if we don't have a context for it. Context is like a hook to hang knowledge on, right? When you learn things in a context, you learn it for a purpose, you learn it to use it, then you remember it. If you learn it just because someone told you to learn it and you have to remember it for the next test, you're not going to be able to remember it long enough to put it to any use anyways. And so discipleship provides both of those, the relationship and the context. Through discipleship, someone's able to pass on not just knowledge, but also character and virtue. And that's, just speaking of the job market, that's what's really needed today. As being on the point on the hiring end before, I can tell you that that's the hardest thing. Skills can be learned. Anyone can learn skills, and usually pretty quickly if they're in the environment where it's being used. But character is difficult to learn if you haven't developed it earlier on. And again, discipleship or apprenticeship is a good way to learn character. So a lot of the examples we've been using here have been, from different people who are in ministry. And that is a good goal. I would encourage all of you to consider offering yourselves to the Lord to serve in some means full time. I know our world tries to tell us that our focus has to be providing for a family or making a good living, but our goal is to serve God. I mean, it doesn't matter how we do on the other things when we stand before Him. It won't matter how much money we made through the years, what kind of car we drove or where we lived. What's going to matter is what we did for the Lord. So I would encourage you to seek Him and see if He might want you to do something like that. I even think this. I would recommend just taking the approach of possibly just trying something like that first. Go just seek after a life of service in on the mission field, serving in the local church, something like that, and to see if that's where God would have you go. And if not, He'll let you know. But make yourself available to Him. I met a young man on a short-term mission trip in Mexico. And he was on a short-term mission trip. We were just down there for a week or so visiting some friends. And he really wanted to be a missionary. He was ready to go right then and there. He'd graduated from high school about a year before then, maybe not quite a year. So I think it was 18, 19, somewhere in there. And he was just ready to go. He wanted to serve the Lord. He loved the people down there that he had met. He'd been learning. He picked up the language really quickly. This short-term mission trip he was with, the group that he was there with, had a neat plan for short-term missionaries. They take him right from the airport, take him to a Mexican family's home that speaks no English, and they just drop him off. And he has to make do and get by. And I actually had that for a weekend, and it was terrifying. But it was a great... When I met him, I thought he'd been there for months. He was really fluent with the language, from what I could pick up. I never did get it. But like I said, he was ready to go. He had a zeal for the Lord. He wanted to learn. He needed to learn a lot, obviously. He was immature, but he really wanted to do it. He was ready to go. And the group that he was down there with wouldn't let him. They basically told him, no, you got to go back, get your 4-year Bible college degree, then you come to our training school for 2 years, and then we'll put you out in the mission field. So he did that. He was that sincere and that zealous. He said, okay, that's what I'll do if that's what I have to do. So he went back right back home and enrolled in the next semester at the Bible college. After a second year, he got married. I think somewhere around the third year, they had a baby. He had to drop out of college to work, and he's still working somewhere in Canada today, and he never did make it to the mission field. Whereas he would have gone right then if they would have let him. There was a family there, a young missionary couple, a Mexican family, but they were missionaries in this village that we were working at the time. And they would have taken him in. He could have helped them. He would have learned from them. He could have been a disciple of that missionary. He was a godly young man, in his 30s or something, I think. And he could have used the help there in the village they were trying to reach. And that young man really could have learned a lot from them and been effective in serving the Lord immediately. And now, that kind of got shot down. So, just another side note there. I'm sorry for rambling. But in other areas of life as well, the same approach applies. Like I said, I mentioned before, it's called apprenticeship. And it was the normal way of learning things for years and years. Really pretty much until the Industrial Revolution, I guess, came around. That's when they started shifting the training mechanisms. And it's starting to make a comeback in some ways, even today. There's, in my field, in the computer programming area, there's a company called Role Model Software. It's run by a Christian. He's a really neat guy named Ken Auer. It's interesting because I first heard about him from a book, just a technical book that he wrote, which I read. And as I read it, in his little acknowledgement, stuff like that, he had some neat stuff to say, and giving the Lord the credit for his book and for those things. And so I looked up more about him and found their website, and they actually have an apprenticeship program where they'll take young people in to learn different technical areas, not just programming. They also have people that do graphics design and video and different things like that, and they work with them, and I think they started out where they just worked and earned their keep kind of that way, but now they do have a small fee they charge because the person's not very productive at first. But it's much less expensive than college, and they learn much more quickly. And then as soon as they're able to do more things in the business, they actually stop paying and start getting paid. So within a year or two, most of the apprentices are earning money while they continue to learn. And I met one young man who went through that. These are out in North Carolina, but I met one young man who went through that, and he's on his own now. He's his own consulting business, and he's doing quite well with that. And still serving the Lord, too. It's neat to have some people, some voices, because that's... The technical field is not a real godly one, but it's nice to see some shining lights in there now and again. But that's Role Model Software. If you want to look them up, they have some neat things to say, neat articles. He's spoken at homeschool conferences out in the North Carolina area as well. The man Ken Auer. And then also I just noticed recently that the Department of Labor, the U.S. Department of Labor, actually has an apprenticeship program or a website for apprenticeships. Well, you can find information about different apprenticeships that are available. I'm not sure I would recommend a lot of those. I mean, one thing with apprenticeship is you have to be concerned about is who's doing it. Because, like we said, they're passing on not just knowledge, but character and virtue. So you want to make sure it's somebody who has God's character and God's virtues to pass on. If we're able to, family is a great way, right? I mean, Jesus was known as a carpenter. And why was that? It's because his earthly father, Joseph, was a carpenter, right? That's what he learned. He learned what his dad did. So if you can do that in your own family, I think it's a great way to go. But if not, if you can find a godly person in your church or somewhere that who you trust, and then to see if you can start up an apprenticeship relationship in what they're doing. Okay, how are we doing on time? Anybody know? Yeah, funny. I'm going to run short. I'm sorry. I'll give you guys extra shopping time in the winter home.
Can I?
Oh, you sure can, yeah. You're not nearly that old. Right. There are tech schools where you can do that. That's true.
Mm-hmm. And getting the skills so you can go on.
Yep.
And a lot of the people in technical colleges aren't those academic, pointy head, you know, so-called intellectual types.
Yep.
That are not quite as, you know. I went through college, too, and there's just a whole philosophy that just envelops the professors because they went to college, and it's that whole permeation. It's very hard to break away. And the thing about the Christian colleges is you do have to be so careful. I just visited one. My older son would like to go to college, and I don't see much results there that I would almost prefer the secular college. At least you know that you don't want to follow those people. The Christian college didn't look very Christian to me at all.
Yep. I've heard the same thing about people. Some people choose actually go to a secular college because then it's more black and white and you know you're on your guard more. I still think there's a lot of risks there. And we've got to look at what is the reason for it. What is our goal? If we're going to these schools because that's the way we're going to get the, you know, where we perceive we're going to get the training to make the most money or something like that, or any kind of, if our goals are not God's goals, and we put ourselves through that risk, we're gonna have harm from it. You know, if our goals are in line with God's will and we're convinced of that, then I think He will protect, you know, young people through that. And I've seen that in some people, like the man I mentioned in Mexico. You know, you mentioned the thing about the missionaries and people sending their children to the schools when they go to the mission field. I know a lot of missions agencies require that even, because they want both the husband and wife to be serving in the mission field, you know, earn their keep, so to speak. And there's a paper, a little pamphlet-like type thing we have at our book table out there, called The Saddest Book in My Library. And it's a book by, I think, it's a daughter of Adoniram Judson. It might be another, but one of the early missionaries who went, and he sent all of his children off to these schools. And actually most of his children died, and two wives too. But this one daughter just completely rejected her faith. And wrote a book about it, and I forget what the title of the book she wrote was, but this article is just about that book and how sad it was that he lost his daughter by sending her away to try to protect her, because his family had lost several children on the mission field from diseases and things, and so to protect this daughter, he saved her life and lost her soul. You know, it's a sad book. It's a sad story.
Also, he was such the epitome of a godly missionary man, and when his children all there, and the wife didn't want to stay. She insisted on going back with the husband, and the children really were devastated. So the mission was great, but the children were...
Yeah, it's sad. A lot of things that God brings up people and does great things through people, and then because of poor decisions, that it stops there. You don't see a lot of generations of that. An example of that is two people that God used in mighty ways. One I mentioned earlier was Charles Spurgeon. Another one is Dwight Moody, who both of these men were used by God in great ways to reach a lot of people. Neither of them had any college education. Dwight Moody couldn't even read completely. And he would get up to preach, and he would get hit words in the Bible he didn't know how to pronounce, so he would just stop there and start preaching some more, and then he'd pick up further down in the passage. But God used those guys in great ways, and yet they both started colleges. Both the colleges named after them after they died. Neither of them started a college with their name, but they both got named after them. So the Moody Bible Institute, which started out as the Chicago Bible Institute, and I don't know what Spurgeon's College started at, but it became Spurgeon's College later. But you look at them now, and you know, I'm sure that some good things have been done in those schools. But where are the Spurgeons that came out of Spurgeon's College? Or where are the Moody's that came out of Moody's College? You know, you just don't see. That's not the method of replication that God has in mind. The method of replication is discipleship. Now, if Moody and Spurgeon had taken the time to work with individuals directly, they could have been another Spurgeon and another Moody after them, just like there were the 12 apostles after Jesus left. I think it's just, you know, we're imperfect people, and so it's difficult for us to keep that pattern going. But I think we can at least try to pursue that direction. I had a couple of closing thoughts here on back on the topic of our goals and seeking, you know, what God wants us to do. There's going to be a lot of pressure in the world from well-meaning people, from either other Christians, from family, to pursue success. Right, to whatever, however that's defined, and it's generally defined in monetary terms. You know, pursue a career that's going to help you earn a good living. Maybe not to get rich, but just, you want to be secure and comfortable. You want to have what you need. You don't want to be in need. But those aren't really goals that were given to us by God. Those are goals that the world has for us, but God's goals are a little different. I mean, He tells us, well, in I'll get into the verse down. It's Matthew 6:33, 6:32, somewhere in there. Therefore, take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knoweth that you have need of all these things, but seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. That's God's goal for us, to seek Him, seek His kingdom, seek His righteousness. If we're doing that, everything else we need will be given to us. We won't have want. For a while, we lived in Texas, down near the border of Mexico, and so we met a lot of missionaries, and it was such an encouraging time. Now, not all missionaries are the same. There are some missionaries that are just it's a career for them. They can go live in a third world country, but earn an American salary and live like kings. And it's sad to see that, but there's others that's just not the case at all. We met a family that was down there for 30 years and had no income. They weren't with a missions thing. They were with one at first, and they left because this group wanted them to teach in a school, and this man was feeling more and more convicted that schools weren't really helpful. And so he wanted to teach the families about homeschooling. But that caused conflict with the church that the mission was affiliated with, and so they said, you can't teach that. So, okay, well, I won't be a missionary anymore. So he just lived down there and kept on teaching what God had shown him to teach. And God provided for them for all those years and for their children and did some amazing things to them. In fact, that's the man who wrote a lot of the booklets that we have at our book table. Which everything at our table is free, by the way, if you want to go grab any of those booklets that I've mentioned. But we've seen so many examples of God's provision for people who are seeking Him and seeking His righteousness. And the Scripture promises it. I think we just, you know, we need to take it on faith. It's not something that's easy for us to do in our culture. Our culture tells us we have to know where our next meal is coming from, or maybe even the next 30 or 40 or, you know, whatever it is. It's difficult for us to live in that, in the mode of give us this day our daily bread. You know, we want years worth stacked away and know where it's coming from, or have insurance to cover it, or something like that. So as we're setting our goals, I think it's important for us to keep in mind what are God's ideals, what does He define success as, and just turn to His Word for that. I'm not going to try to define it for you guys. It's something between you and the Lord, but you need to go to Him and go to His Word to see what success means and where your goals should be. I want to read one last quote. This is from another old dead guy, John Wesley, who's one of my heroes. He wrote this in 1780, It says, in what business will your son be most likely to love and serve God? In what employment will he have the greatest advantage for laying up treasure in heaven? I have been shocked above measure in observing how little this is attended to, even by pious parents. Even these considered only how he may get the most money, not how he may get the most holiness. Even these, upon this glorious motive, send him to a heathen master or into a family where there is not the very form, much less the power of religion. Upon this motive, they fix him in a business which will necessarily expose him to such temptations as would leave him not a probability, if a possibility, of serving God. Now that's, you know, pretty strong words there that he's saying, but it's often true. I've seen, we saw this really a lot in Mexico, where people have hard times there. People live in a lot of poverty there, and so you see families that they don't want that poverty for their children. So they want them to be sure. They want to be sure that they do better. So and they're thinking, because that's what everyone's telling them, is that means college. So they send them to the colleges, and the public colleges or the free colleges in Mexico are just terrible. They're usually the ones that are funded by various communist countries, and they're very anti-God. And many people that are, you know, strong believers, they send their children to schools thinking that's going to get them some economic security, and their children fall away. If we keep our goals, the physical, the earthly goals, then we're really exposing our children and ourselves to a lot of danger. So I guess just back to that point I had earlier on, that the best place for us to be is in God's will. So I'm not saying don't consider college, don't go to college. If college is what God shows you is the way to get the training you need for what He wants you to do, now be convinced of that though. Because if you're not, if you're doubt, if you're not sure, then just don't do it. Just wait. Wait until He shows you for sure. It won't kill you. Because if you go outside of His will and go into an environment like that, you're really putting yourself at a lot of unnecessary risk. And will more than likely have a lot of harm. I mean, God's merciful, and I know people He's brought through those kinds of things, and they can look back. You mentioned some friends who had made decisions or did things that they were told to do and regret it now. But God does work those things. You know, He works all things together for good. But if you can save all the pain, all the lost time, and all the heartache that could come from living out of God's will and putting yourselves at risk in those ways, I think it's worth doing. It's worth waiting for. It's worth just taking the time to pray and consider. And that's all I really encourage you to do, is just prayerfully consider these things before you make the decision to go to college. And that's it. Thanks for your time. Any other questions or anything? Or yes? If you go to rolemodelsoftware.com, I think that's what it's called. Or you can put it into a search engine, like Google or something like that, and find it that way too. Thanks for coming.